Hey, what's up, everybody, and welcome back to That Triathlon Show, the podcast presented by scientifictriathlon.com. I'm your host, Michael, and this episode is Q&A number 6. Just as a reminder, if you don't know how to get questions sent into the podcast and get them answered, just send it to me on email, michael@scientifictriathlon.com, and that's Michael with a K, or you can send them to me directly on Facebook. I have a Facebook Messenger widget on my website, scientifictriathlon.com, so you can just go to the website, and on any page, you should see that widget in the bottom right corner, and you can submit your questions there. Before we get into today's questions, big thank you to our sponsors. First, we have Stack that you can find on stackzero.com. That's S-T-A-C-0 spelled out .com. They produce the world's quietest bike trainers. And in addition to being super quiet because they don't use a resistance flywheel but magnets, they are also very portable. You can fold them and store them underneath your bed, for example. So that's very convenient, and especially if you live in a smaller apartment. And also, they have these models with the exact features that you need or don't need. So at different price points with different features, all the way from the base model up to the new Stack Zero Halcyon, which recently won the award for the best bike training accessory at the big Eurobike convention. So that's a very, very significant award to win for a bike training company, and just goes to show that Stack is actually at the front end of the bike trainer industry. With any of those models, whichever one you choose, you can get your trainer for 20% off with the promo code TTS20 on stackzero.com. And warm welcome back to Ventum. Ventum is back as a sponsor, and they are, of course, the manufacturers of the ultimate triathlon bikes that use technology from fighter jets and Formula One race cars. And boy, do they look like that. Beautiful bikes. But in addition to being super fast, super aerodynamic, they are actually a lot easier to build, pack, and travel with than any other tri bike, which is an advantage that is often overlooked when it comes to, or a criterion that is often overlooked when it comes to selecting your bike. So definitely that's something to consider. They use standard components. It's very easy. I actually just got my Ventum bike that I ordered a few weeks ago and put it together here, and I can attest that I'm not a good bike mechanic, but it was easy to put it together. And also, you can get 110% of the value of your old bike towards the purchase of a new Ventum bike, so that's another brilliant way to finance the purchase of your new triathlon bike. And you can use the promo code THATTRIATHLONSHOW to get a free upgrade from training wheels to Edco Aerosport G065 race wheel when you order your Ventum bike on ventumracing.com. Note that this won't be shown on your order, but when you add that promo code THATTRIATHLONSHOW, this will alert Ventum to make the adjustment to your order, so you will be getting those race wheels rather than the standard wheels. All right, so let's get into today's questions. First, we have Alex Higham from the United Kingdom, and he writes, "Hi, Michael. Having done pretty well in a handful of triathlons previously, I decided to take it to the next level and have set myself the challenge of qualifying for the GB middle distance age group team next year. I have a 2,000 British pounds Carbon Canyon Ultimate road bike. Am I putting myself at a serious disadvantage if I don't get a time trial bike? Do people ever qualify on normal racing bikes with aero bars clipped on? I heard I might do better on a hillier course, but what total elevation gain should I look for in a middle distance race if that is true?" And then there's a bit more to the email, but that's essentially the question. So thank you for a question, Alex. As I wrote to you earlier, you can absolutely do it. The most important thing when it comes to aerodynamics is, after all, the rider and your position on the bike. So get a really good bike fit. That's the most important thing, and actually it means more than the bike, even if you get a bike as fast as a Ventum. But the rider, the bike fit is a prerequisite for being fast. It doesn't matter if you're on the fastest bike in the world. If you have a poor bike fit, you're not going to go fast. And a couple of anecdotal examples. I know that it's been a few years already, but both legends of the sport, Simon Lessing and Chrissy Wellington, are famous for having won several Ironman races on road bikes with just clip-on aero bars. And less famously, perhaps, but personally, I recently won the 25 to 29 age group in Ironman 70.3 Qashqai's on a road bike with clip-on aero bars. So I have some very recent experience myself from that. And as I said, now I'm buying a Ventum, and I have it here, and I'm actually just waiting to go and do a bike fit on it before I'll start training on it. So definitely there is that advantage of having the triathlon bike, which is, it can be quite considerable, but at the same time, I can't complain having won my age group and qualified for Worlds. So you can do very, very well on a road bike with clip-on aero bars. And consider even that you can get quite a good set of aero bars, and that can help you get into a really good position if you have a good bike fit done. I only had the draft legal types of aero bars, which can only extend to your brake lever. So that's putting myself at an even more of a disadvantage when it comes to how I can position myself on the bike. But still, I managed to get pretty aerodynamic with the right bike fit and those short clip-on aero bars. As for your other question about the course selection, yes, you might do better on a hilly course, but it really also does depend a lot on your physiological characteristics and attributes. So on a hilly course, if you have a good power to weight, then that is definitely going to be to your advantage, especially on a road bike. But it is possible to get to a good power to aerodynamics, which would be the more important ratio when it comes to flatter races on a road bike. Again, it all comes back to that bike fit. So that is super important, but also your frame size, basically, not the bike frame, but your body frame. So for example, personally, I'm not super small, but quite small, which allows me to get aerodynamic even on a road bike, just because my frame size allows me to get pretty narrow in my on my bike. So the race that I raced, it had a long section that was very flat and very much favoring a power to aerodynamic type of rider. But that still suited me because I had pretty good absolute aerodynamics as well. And of course, then as it got to the hills, that was really where my forte was, and I could climb really well on the road bike compared to my competitors on triathlon bikes. But that was only from 55 to 80 kilometers of the race, I think. The rest of the course was very flat or downhill and favoring aerodynamics. So, and the total gain that I had in that race was 600 meters, I think. So not very much. If you are a bit worried that your aerodynamics will not be good enough, then definitely look for a race that has more elevation gain in the 1,000 to 1,500 meter range is what I would recommend. And then you can really take advantage of a good power to weight ratio without worrying too much about the power to aerodynamics ratio. So for a half distance race, that is, I'm just going to look back at your question. Yes, that is what you were trying to qualify for, then that 1,000 to 1,500 meters of elevation gain, that is what I would recommend that you look out for. But do check that your power to weight ratio is conducive for that sort of course. All this being said, yes, you are of course putting yourself at a bit of a disadvantage, but it's not an insurmountable disadvantage. But you do have to, of course, get a little bit fitter than your competitors that are on triathlon bikes. That is not impossible, of course, and it can actually be very motivating, I would say, from personal experience, to have that sort of challenge that you're working towards. But you have that little disadvantage, but I want to reassure you that it's not as big as making this whole project impossible for you if you do all the other things right. And especially, like, if you take some of the money that you would invest in a triathlon bike and invest it in other things like the bike fit on your road bike that we mentioned already, but also coaching, one-on-one swimming lessons, regular physiotherapy or massages, those sorts of things, then those investments can easily make up for that disadvantage that you have in terms of being not as aerodynamic on the bike. So good luck, Alex, and really I hope that you reach out to me when you are getting to your goal races and let me know how you go. I'm really eager to hear how it goes for you. All right, the next question is from Will Fenwick, who I'm not sure from which country Will is, I forgot to ask, but he writes, Now that many athletes' seasons have wrapped up or are very nearly wrapped up, what is your take on post-season rest and recovery? How long should an athlete take off? And to what extent should their training exercise load be reduced during that time before entering into their off-season preparations? Do you have specific recommendations for how an athlete looking ahead to next year should approach their off-season? This is another very great and very timely question. So first of all, some related listening. Last week's Q&A, Q&A number 5, that was on the 25th of October. In that episode, I discussed how to approach that off-season training. So after you get out of your post-season break, essentially, you would get into off-season training. And I discussed that in that episode. So I'll link to the Q&A number 5, where I do discuss that in the episode description of this Q&A, Q&A number 6. So here, let's focus on the question of how long you should take off and to what extent your exercise training load should be reduced during that time. So first here, a big disclaimer. As usual, it depends and it's very individual. In many cases, though, there are some rule of thumbs that you can follow. First, I would say that the more and the harder that you train over the course of the year, the harder you need to recover in the off season. Not meaning that you should train during your rest, but actually that you need to take some serious time off and make sure that you actually rest up really, really well. On the other end of the extreme, another example would be, like, let's use a non-triathlete, somebody who's just exercising, like, for example, jogging 3 times per week. Do they need to take time off? Do they need to have an off-season or post-season break? No, they don't. They can do that year round, no problem, and that's what they should do, because every human being should exercise a few times per week, or ideally a little bit every day. So those are some things to consider. How much have you been training and how hard have you been training over the course of the year? But in addition to the actual physical training that you do and have done, you also need to consider the mental toll that it takes on you. So for example, a very seasoned triathlete might be able to train 15 hours per week, and that may not be too much, neither physically or mentally. So they'll be fine with a short-ish post-season break and be completely ready, both mentally and physically, to get going again after that short break. Let's call it 2 weeks of either complete rest or non-structured training. I'll get into this later. But on the other hand, somebody who's training, let's say, 8 hours per week, but they have stepped it up from training only five hours per week the previous year, they have a serious increase in training load from 1 year to the next, and they may need, not necessarily physically, because if they have done this sort of training year-round, they should be ready to get physically prepared in the same amount of time that that 15-hour athlete. But mentally, they have started training a lot more, probably gotten quite a bit more serious about their training as well. So they may need more rest to really be mentally fresh and be full of motivation and eagerness to get going and get training again. So that is also very important to take into consideration. We're not just talking about the physical recovery, but also the mental recovery and regaining that eagerness to train again. So really, I think that you should take a break from all structured training for as long as you need to. And this is where the individual aspect comes into play. As long as you need to may vary a lot, but you should feel fully recovered physically, and you should also feel fully recovered mentally. And I also would say that the first day that you feel, now I really want to go out there and train again, I can't wait, please stop this post-season break agony. The first day that you feel that you think that, wait for 2 more days with no structured training. And then you get back to training to make sure that you really have an abundance of mojo to get going training. So I know that I haven't really answered your question yet, because I always think it's important to give examples and give some specifics. So here are some specific examples that will help you figure this out for yourself. I think that over the course of a year, having at least 2 weeks with no swim, bike, and run training is a minimum. I don't think it has to be 2 consecutive weeks in the postseason necessarily. You might make one of those non-swim bike run weeks in a mid-season break, for example, if you have a long season. That is a great strategy to do it. So that's something that I might apply with somebody who is training in America, where, and in parts of America at least, where the weather is good, or in Brazil, where the season is really long. Whereas for somebody training in Finland, where the season is short, or Sweden, then that's a completely different story. They usually would not have, I actually would say that they have never had, under my coaching, had a mid-season break, but rather than those 2 weeks would come at the postseason. But somebody in California might have 1 week as a mid-season break and 1 or 2 weeks as a postseason break with absolutely no swimming, biking, and running. In this no swim, bike, and run training block, you can still and should still be moving. You can do a little bit of exercise, but I'll get to that a bit later. So that's the first rule, that I think that you should have 2 weeks in total over the course of the year with no swim, bike, and run training. And it can be more, and this depends on how much you train and how much recovery that you actually need. But in addition to these no swim, bike, and run weeks, I think that your postseason breaks, in general, it should be at least 2 weeks, but that might be just 1 week with absolutely no swimming, biking, and running. And the second week might be absolutely no structured training, but you do allow yourself to go for a short jog or a short bike ride if you really feel like it. Nothing long or nothing hard, just feel good exercising. And it can be swimming, biking, and running, or it can be something else. It can be going for a hike. It can be playing football, tennis, beer pong, or some other sport that you happen to like. And by the way, those other, just go out for some fun sporting activities, those you can do as well in the no swim, bike, and run week. You don't have to completely shut down and just lay on the couch, and I don't think that you should do that either. If your last season of the race, your last race of the season is what I meant to say, if that is an Ironman, then things are a bit different. Then I do think that you should have at least 2 weeks of absolutely no swimming, biking, and running. I think it's necessary, and possibly followed by two more weeks of no structured, very minimal training. That's because the Ironman just takes so much more out of you, both physically and also mentally. And similarly, if you've had a very long season with a lot of races and a lot of consistent and intense training, then I think the same thing applies with 2 weeks with no swimming, biking, and running, and 1 to 2 weeks of very minimal but optional non-structured training. So for example, here in Portugal, some of my teammates that are aspiring elite athletes have been training and racing at a very high and intense level from March until the end of October. So it's a very long season, and I know that they will have more or less a month with very little in terms of structured training, if anything, any structured training. To answer the question of to what extent your training should be reduced during that time and not necessarily be completely shut down, again, in the non-swim, bike, and run weeks, no swimming, no biking, and no running. But I do think that you should keep moving, go for some walks, perhaps use a bike commute to work, maybe go to the gym, do some rock climbing, just feel good, exercise, things that you like and enjoy doing. In those non-structured week where you are allowed to do some light running or biking or swimming, I think that at most 1 hour of exercise per day is that's the maximum you should go. You can go significantly lower than that. You do not need to train every day. But to give you an example of what might be an appropriate week in that non-structured training week, for example, something like one swim of 45 minutes, two runs of 30 minutes, and one bike ride of 1 hour, and then 1 to 2 other exercise modalities that you just do for fun, like the tennis or rock climbing or whatever it is. So something like that might give you an idea, and perhaps add some mobility and core strength if you want to. And that's about it. I hope that it answers your question. One more thing that I should mention, by the way, is that it is very important that you go into the postseason break with the right mindset. And the right mindset here is that taking this break and taking it seriously will make you faster. You need to recover fully, both physically and mentally, to then be able to take your training to the next level in the coming season. That's what you are doing. You have been building up, and doing a lot of training, a lot of racing, but also you have been sort of reducing your body's ability to absorb much more training load. Now you want to slightly reduce your fitness and, again, increase your body's responsiveness to training as you take your break. And if you do that and you make it a long enough break, not just 2 days, then your responsiveness will be at a higher level than it was. It's sort of a long-term adaptation to training. So do you take that mindset that this is important in your process of becoming a faster triathlete and a better triathlete? But of course, I've also mentioned before that I think that for some age groupers, too long season breaks is a problem and something that's holding them back. So just take a moment to think about where you fall on the spectrum of taking too long breaks or not taking long breaks enough, or perhaps you are already taking your breaks just at the right amount. So think about that. Use that awareness of your tendencies to find the right balance for you. Hope that you enjoyed these questions and found my answers useful and insightful. I have, before we go, a very exciting announcement to make. I have just launched a new training plan, and this is my intermediate 70.3 or half distance training plan. It's 16 weeks long, and on average, it has 8.5 hours of training per week. Just as with my previous plan that I launched, the strength training plan, and probably with all future plans that I will launch, I want to reward the early adopters. So there is a launch promo, and that is 60% off the price of the training plan until Sunday, the 11th of November. So that's a great, great promo, and you can use the code LAUNCH60, that's LAUNCH60, at the checkout page on Training Peaks when you buy this plan. The link to the plan is in the episode description, or you can just go to scientifictriathlon.com, and in the training plans drop down menu, you just click through to intermediate 70.3. And as I mentioned there, the plan is currently only available on Training Peaks, but as usual, I will make PDF versions as follows. And if you purchase on Training Peaks now, you will get that PDF version at no extra cost when it is ready. And also, because some people are asking me this, yes, you can use my training programs on Training Peaks, even with a free Training Peaks account. And on that page on Training Peaks that describes the program in more detail, you will find sample workouts and a more thorough description so you can see if it's right for you. And that's about it. I'll link to that in the episode description here, or as I mentioned, just go to my website, click through to intermediate 70.3 under training plans. Big thank you to our sponsors, Ventum, that you can find on ventumracing.com. If you are in that position where, as relating to our first question, you have sort of maxed out on your road bike abilities, like I feel I have, which is why I have ordered a Ventum, and now I'm starting to train on it within a few days, then the triathlon bike that you choose, you want to choose a fast one, and that, in my opinion, is a Ventum. They have done some incredible testing and incredible research and development that goes into these bikes. You can listen to my interview with Jimmy Sear, for example, in episode 116, I believe it is. I'll link to it in the episode description as well, where he talks about how the research and development and how they go about developing the Ventum bikes. And it is very impressive. So you can rest assured that it's a very, very, very good bike. And you will not be disappointed with the speed they will bring you. And as I mentioned, you can get upgraded for free from training wheels to Edco Aerosport G065 race wheels when you order your bike on Ventum and use the promo code DATTRIATHLONSHOW, all one word, all caps. And a big thank you to Stack that you can find on stackzero.com. That's where you can check out the specifications for all the different bike trainer models. All of them are completely silent. All of them are portable and foldable. And for all of them, you can get 20% off your order when you use the promo code TTS20 on stackzero.com. Thank you, as always, for listening. Keep training smart and keep loving triathlon.